This is Doug LaFollette calling to order the meeting of the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands at about 2 o'clock on January 20th, 2015. All three commissioners are present, as is our staff as well. I have to say before we start that this agenda sort of surprised me when I got it. I've never seen such an extensive one. For the record, items 5 through 12 were specially requested by the state treasurer. I'll try to get through this as efficiently as possible. Everyone will bear with us. I'm sure we can do that. The first item is the approval of the minutes of the January 6th meeting. As usual, I looked them over, and they are as I remember. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
This is Brad Schimmel. I move to approve.
I can second that.
Any comments or questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. You passed unanimously. The next item we have are to approve some new loans. We have 9 loans at, before us for close to $10 million. As I always do, I ask, have these loans been looked at for public purpose?
The loans have been reviewed by the Department of Justice to meet the public purpose requirement, yes.
Sounds fine. Do I have a motion to approve these 9 loans?
I guess I can make that motion. This is Matt.
I'll second. This is Brad Schimmel.
Any discussion? If not, all in favor of approving the 9 loans, say aye.
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 Aye. Passed unanimously. The next item is considered for a sale of some of our isolated property. This is something we've been trying to do since we got the authority under the land bank, which has now been close to 10 years, and we've been trying to consolidate pieces that don't fit into our timber management system. So they put together a package here of about 320 acres of isolated parcels in Iron County, and the board has suggested that we put those up for sale under a public sale, as we do.
This is Brad Schimmel. Out of curiosity, I just wondered why do we sell them as one big parcel rather than individual lots?
That's a good question. I asked the same question, and Tom, do you want to answer him the way you answered me?
I'd be happy to. One of the things we do when we're looking at selling land is we always contact the neighboring landowners and ask if they're interested. And it so happens in this particular situation that there is a neighboring landholder that has expanded their holdings to the point where they touch each of these particular parcels. And so there is one entity that's interested in buying all of them. Otherwise, when we do not have that situation, we will more oftentimes sell them individually. But in this case, it looks like there's someone who's interested in all of them.
Thank you.
So just to be clear, this will be still done under a standard sealed bid process. So the public will be notified and an auction will take place. The highest bidder who meets or exceeds the appraised value will be awarded the sale.
And, of course, we have a minimum, so they have to at least meet that minimum. Do I have a motion to approve this public sale of 320 acres?
This is Matt. I guess I can make that motion.
I'll second the motion.
Good. Are there any further discussion?
Well, I'm being new to this. I just have some more questions of the.
Sure, no problem.
What is it about these particular pieces of land that don't fit our overall plan? Is it just that they're so isolated, or?
Yeah, so they're isolated, and some of them don't have access even. So it wouldn't be economically to try to have a timber sale on those individual pieces, and the ones that don't have access, that would not be possible. So actually, since we got the land bank authority, the staff up north have done a really good job, and we've been able to consolidate things a great deal. And this is sort of I think maybe one of the last pieces to get rid of these eight parcels.
Mr. Chairman, may I just make one brief comment in further response to Brad? Brad, I could provide you as much or as little additional information as you want, but there are, I just want to be clear, there's a set of criteria for every BCPL sale, and being isolated, being non-productive and therefore non-revenue generating from a timber standpoint, being isolated, being outside our consolidation zone, these are the criteria. You will see that in the board packet, the Northern office has to evaluate a sale based on a set of criteria. I gave you the highlights of those. They have to sign a document attesting to that. I review the document and sign it, and all those steps occur prior to us putting a sale in front of you. So the primary drivers are it's isolated, it doesn't have timber, or it has impaired access, or it's outside our consolidation zone. In this case, it was inside our consolidation zone, but it had little to no value for timber.
Okay.
So, any other questions? If not,
I'm sorry. I misspoke. It's outside the consolidation zone. So that in it.
I was going to comment on that, but I wasn't going to bother. So this is outside of the sections we're putting together in consolidation. Any other questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Passed unanimously. Okay, the next item is the first one here that was requested by the state treasurer, and it involves board responsibility under the Constitution, which was in Article 10, as I understand it. Matt, do you want to explain to us what is your interest here?
Yeah, and Doug, in some cases I'll defer to you. Obviously, the Secretary of State has been doing this a while. I just have some things I'd like to discuss. There's not necessarily votes on everything here. There's just some things I want to discuss. And I think you look at this one, I think everybody has it in front of them. You know, it's a very simple statement about what our constitutional role is. It just says the three of us constitute a board for the sale of school and university lands and for the investment of funds arising therefrom. And that's basically all I really want to talk about is that I see that that's our only mission, to sell land possibly and then make investments from the money to give it to our beneficiaries. I don't see our role on this board is to do anything else, like, for example, become a Wisconsin version of the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. I just think in some cases things might be straying, and I'll talk to them more in future points, but I just think I just wanted to take a look at what our constitutional duty is, and it's pretty clear to me.
Okay, that's fine. Brad, do you have any additional thoughts?
No, I don't at this point.
All right, that's good. In that case, we'll move on to item six, which is the discussion of expenditures. And under this one, as I went through the material that was provided, there are several items, I think maybe four different items that Matt was interested in. Again, do you want to explain what your interest is?
Thank you, Secretary. I guess, first and foremost, I want to make clear that I believe all aspects of government need to do a better job of being stewards of taxpayer money and make purchase decisions based on needs versus wants. Does government need it, or do we want it? And, you know, in regards to the BCPL, which the three of us serve on, it's important to note that every single dollar that we don't spend goes right to the children of Wisconsin. Thus, we need to make sure that we get every Wisconsin dollar to those children. And unlike other agencies in government, our money must go back to the school children. So if you don't mind, Doug, I'll just go through a few of these point by point, and I'll be brief. I'll try to get it out, and I just want to...
Yeah, no, Matt, that's fine. One point of clarification, the money does not go directly to the school children. It goes into the trust fund. That trust fund then is used to make loans. The interest from that loans goes directly to the school children.
Well, but our operating budget does work out of that, and, you know, it does take from it. But one way or another, the money flows that way. So let's... We'll just look at a few of them. I specifically sent an email in regards to a few. I thought, for example, there's item number 6, page 1, says a New York Times subscription for $2,296. And I just find that that's $2,000 that doesn't go to, you know, Wisconsin children ultimately. And I just think we need to do a better job making sure we're doing things that are most for our children, what they need. And when I look at the other expenses, it seems much more understandable, for example, to have the Wisconsin State Journal or the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, considering we live in Wisconsin and not New York City. And the way I see it is that's like $2,200 that the kids of Wisconsin will never get back. And, you know, ultimately these are decisions made by the executive secretary. The three of us on this board aren't going to vote on every single one of these things. So obviously it's just a priority for what we need and what we don't need. If you guys want to interrupt me at one point, go right ahead, but I'm just going to flow through these. The next one would be page 3.
Let me interrupt just so we try to be clear as to what you're trying to say. Are you interested in taking action on these items, or you just would like to sort of clarify your interest?
Today, I don't want to spring votes on you guys. These things are piddly. I think ultimately I'd like to see some changes made. And, you know, obviously it'll come from from us through the board. But I just want to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to make sure that every dollar that we can gets back to the school children. So
okay,
if I look at page 3, for example,
Matt, before you continue, let me interject. Brad, do you have any comment on this first item before he continues? If not, Matt, you can go ahead then.
Well, I think the point is well made as to,
This is Brad speaking, okay.
Yes, it is. I think there are some, I agree that there are some subscriptions that make sense. The Lakeland Times, that covers the news area where most of the land over which we have authority is located. Makes sense for that subscription. I can see the validity in the criticism relative to the New York Times. So I guess I'd want to hear more about why that would be justified.
I'll interject for just a second, Attorney General. I mean, the way I look at it is, you know, T had responded back to me that these are publications, there's 5 of them that were at least listed, that were generally read by 3 people in the office. And I guess I would just make the point, I understand, you know, there's going to be some cost in doing government. I'm not silly to think that's not true. But, you know, getting the Journal Sentinel, the State Journal, the Lakeland Times, those are in our state. I mean, if we're going to get the New York Times, why not get the Miami Herald? Why not get the LA Times? I mean, I just think we got to do a better job. And again, this is just something to look at going forward, and that's the only reason I'm presenting it to the board today.
Well, I don't have any big thoughts other than maybe a question for Tom possibly or someone, and that is, I do know that one of our main activities is checking the market and setting interest rates and making sure our interest rates are competitive, and I don't know whether the New York Times and or the Wall Street Journal are relevant to that activity. Maybe you could clarify or explain to me.
This is Tia here. I, as the person who subscribed to these, I should respond. So it's been my view that having a diversity of news sources is helpful. So we subscribe to the Wall Street Journal, and if I understand Commissioner Demchak correctly, he does not object to us subscribing to the Wall Street Journal, but he does object to us subscribing to the New York Times. I saw value in it. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't. Both those newspapers cover national business news, which informs our investment policies, procedures, and actions.
Okay.
Commissioner LaFalle, I mean, if the commissioners want to weigh in, I don't think we have to go back and forth. That's not the point of what I wanted to address these. Why don't I just make my points? And obviously, if the two gentlemen and our commissioners want to weigh in, obviously I'll listen. But these are just my concerns, and I just wanted to. This is really our only forum to share it. Obviously, the three of us can't speak outside of here, so that's why I had to put them on the agenda. So, if you don't mind, should I just move on to the next one?
Okay.
The next one has to do with cellular service for fiscal year 2014, and what I see is most unnecessary. The last few numbers on there, they all say $160. That has to do with 5 iPad subscriptions for cellular service for staff members at the BCPL. And what I'd say to that is the BCPL has 9.5 staff, but yet we have 5 iPads with cellular service for them. And these are staff that mostly work in an office with a desktop computer. So I just think having half of a staff of a small agency with iPads just seems a little much to me. And again, the way I see it is that's $160 a month, which times 12 or a year is about $2,000. And I'd, again, just much prefer that money going to the Children of Wisconsin and getting more books.
Okay.
I can move on to the next one. The next one is probably a little more detailed. According, page 4 of item 6 has to do with out-of-state travel. These are mostly conferences. Again, I got this information from Open Book, which is the state government website. And the current Secretary of State, Mr. La Follette, seemingly you spend costs about $22,000 to go on these conferences since at least 2008. And these are, again, mostly the Western States Land Conferences. And I guess I would just say that my opinion is I don't think these trips necessarily need to be attended by commissioners. Maybe a member from the staff should go, but, again, that's probably a maybe as well. The way I see it is, again, $22,000 spent for yourself, for example, or Commissioner La Follette, whereas the former Attorney General, J.B. Van Hollen, he seemingly never went on a trip. You know, and you know, generally speaking, you guys voted the exact same way over the last 4, 6, 8 years. So I just don't think it's necessarily something that's needed. And, you know, if you had not gone, we would have possibly been able to buy more books. And I understand the money doesn't flow directly, exactly, but the concept is there is that there'd be more money available. And the way I see it, I kind of put a little diagram on the bottom of that page. You know, at $4.49 for a popular children's book, a book I read to my niece and nephew, Flap Stanley, that's $4.49. We could have bought 5,000 books for that price. And so, I mean, it's just my opinion. I'd much rather put more money towards giving it back to the, you know, libraries of the state of Wisconsin and spend less on these conferences. I understand conferences will be attended. I understand, you know, Tom, Rich, they go on some stuff for, you know, the investment stuff. That's going to happen. I get that. But I would just prefer long-term we try to find a way to cut down some of this cost.
Okay.
Okay. So I move on to the next one. The page 5 and 6 have to do with the Rainforest Alliance. When I was looking up an Open Book, this one kind of jumped out at me because it says the word rainforest, and needless to say, there's nothing in Wisconsin near the rainforest, so it kind of stood out. And in this instance, we had an executive secretary that went ahead and, without board approval, and spent $11,000 to consider what I consider a kind of a questionable group in order to get something called Forest Stewardship Council. And a little bit more is explained about Forest Stewardship Council on page 6 of item 6. But I guess I'd say there's a few things to talk about with this expenditure. One, we didn't need to get FSC certification. It's completely optional. It was just something that was done. And two, I think more importantly, it represents a perfect example of how, in this case, the executive secretary runs the agency, what I would consider backwards. In this case, Tia went out and got the FSC certification, including spending the $11,000, and then asked the board to approve taking the certification. Which is
okay, Matt, I'm going to interrupt on this one because I've been involved in this, and I actually encouraged the staff over a number of years to look into this issue, and they finally have taken action, which the board was aware of when they were doing it. The reason for this is very clear. The DNR, for example, spent about $100,000, I believe, having their land certified, as do many other county forests. The reason for it is a number of our purchasers of our timber require that certification before they will buy the logs. In fact, they're making it tougher. One major purchaser of our logs, I just learned the other day, has changed from 50% to 75% of the logs they buy have to come from certified forests. So we were kind of late in doing this, but it was good that we finally have done it, and it's important for us to maintain our ability to sell logs to the sawmills up north.
Okay. Well, Commissioner, I guess, LaFollette, I guess I'd say, I mean, that's fine, but I specifically asked the board, and they could not find any documentation where the board itself, you were one of 3 commissioners, ever voted to go ahead and pursue this. So you said you had spoken to the board, which means, you know, TR or whatever. But I think if we're going to go out and pursue something, why would you guys voted on December 16th, so the last meeting of the former commissioners, you voted yes to take the commission, you know, to take the certification. Why wasn't it, once you guys had received the bid for the $11,000, that would have been the time to take it up with the board, because, for example, if I was a commissioner at the time, I would have voted no on that. Instead, it was done the other way, that they already spent the money, and then you're saying, okay, let's take the certification. Well, after the money was spent, even I might have said, well, we've already spent the $11,000. Why not take the title? Because we've already paid for it.
I think we're being a little redundant here. I don't know whether it's worth searching old records or not, but my memory is that this was discussed at a board meeting, possibly not the specific amount, but the fact that we should pursue this. And I think that the staff went ahead and did pursue that. But I don't see a lot of point in beating this dead horse any further.
Well, and I understand that, but I'm saying it was only in the last year, and the agenda items are very brief. There's about five items on most pages. It's just a fact. It was not on the agenda. So the board never voted to do it. It's just a fact. I looked it up, and the board staff confirmed that they've never voted on it. So I guess what I'm saying, you know, Commissioner LaFollette, at that time, I would have thought the other commissioners, at that point, Van Hollen and Schuler, they should have weighed in to say, okay, we've got this bid. Okay, go ahead and do it. Let's get the certification. Instead, at the very end, after all the money was already spent, then it was brought up for, okay, let's take it. I'm saying it was done backwards. In the grand scheme of things, I mean, it's $11,000, but I would have preferred the money not to have been spent. So.
Okay, I think we understand your point.
Okay. You want to move on to the next point?
If I can then proceed, that handles the items under number 6. Before we proceed, I don't want to go too quickly. Brad, do you have anything you wish to say before we go on?
Nope.
Okay. The next item is item number 7, which is involving the school trust land revenues versus, I believe, the expenses of the office of, that maintains the foresters who manage the land. And again, Matt, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you, sir. I guess this one is probably the most important one that I care to discuss today. I have some huge concerns regarding the costs associated with managing the trust lands and then the income derived from that land. The land, you know, when I had a conversation with Tia, she had mentioned that it might be worth $1,000 an acre as a ballpark. So that means the lands we own up north might be worth anywhere from $50 to $100 million in our ballpark. We don't, you know, have a full accurate. But yet, if you look at what we're selling our timber for versus what the cost to keep the people that are managing the timber up north, I think at best we're breaking even, and I think more likely we're losing money. So if you wouldn't mind just looking at item 7, page 1, this was a document given to me by the staff. It looks like for fiscal year 2014, they spent about $530,000 to run the northern office, which clearly would have to do with, you know, operating the lands up north. And if you look at that, for example, in fiscal year 15, we only brought in $466,000 in revenue. And I also think that, you know, this was the number given to me by the board just for the northern office, which, you know, only has the allocation for the specific office. When in my conversations with Tia, Tom, and other Vicky in the office, it seems pretty obvious to me that the Madison office is heavily involved as well. And so if you look at the full budget for the BCPL, our budget's about $1.5 million. So let's say we said about half of the budget goes towards managing the land. That would be $750,000 or $750,000. And if we're spending that amount, anywhere from $500,000 to $750,000, to bring in only $466,000, I mean, that's, you know, we're losing money. And, you know, obviously we have a fiduciary responsibility to make money for our beneficiaries, which are, you know, kids in Wisconsin and college students in Wisconsin. And I think in that regard we might be failing them. And it's just, for me, it's not acceptable on assets worth so much. And I think we should pursue in the future, other options need to be, you know, looked at, whether it was working with counties on a partnership, maybe selling some of the land. I don't know, but I think it's important that we note that the lands up north, we're not making any money. We're either breaking even or losing money. And then I guess I'll turn it over for you guys.
Right. Well, I think you raised some good questions there. And as someone who's been on the board for a while, we've discussed this on and off. We've never done a thorough accounting like you have started to do. I have a couple of thoughts. First of all, we didn't have this land bank authority until about 9 years ago, and that allowed us to begin to try to consolidate this land and make it more productive, which I think has been a positive thing in terms of the revenue issue. Another point which is important as an elected person in Wisconsin to me is that our forestry activity, even though it may only break even, does provide a lot of jobs for small loggers and small logging mills, people who would not be able to really function without the timbering that we do, which is fairly small scale. And our small scale fits in with their small scale. Again, I don't have numbers as how many, although you can see from the one attachment there for the timber sales in the 11-13 biennium, you can see how many contracts and the amounts. And I'm not stressing the amounts as much as the fact that a lot of small individual loggers and small logging groups and the sawmills do have jobs based
Mr.
on that.
Mr. Would you mind if I just... I think you, the point you're making, I get that. I'm seeing
it'd be nice if you could finish a sentence.
Oh, what did you say?
If I could finish a sentence.
Sure, go ahead.
So I think that is a factor that should come into play. But I think it's a valid point that the treasurer raises, and I would suggest that if the board wishes to, we could ask the staff to take a more thorough look at this situation and come back to us with their recommendations and thoughts for the short and middle range use of our land. I think that's a valid question.
What I was trying to say, sir, and then I'll see if the Attorney General has any comments, but I think your point, I mean, I'm looking at that same page, it's page 4, and it's got the various logging companies. But I mean, I think it's also equally important to note if we did, let's say, a county partnership or we sold some of these tracts, it would still be logged by somebody. It's not like this land would just sit idle. Counties, I've talked to a few people up in the county area, up in these northern areas, and obviously they have more land than the BCPL does, and they log up there as well. So I'm not saying that we should just leave this land and do nothing, but because obviously people do make money and there are jobs out of it, but I'm just saying on the value of that land and what it costs to keep the northern office with the staff and what they do up there, we're not making money, and I believe we're losing money. So I think, to your point, it's something we do need to examine.
Yeah, and again, as I said, I think it's a valid question. Another point that I can remember, and again, I don't have acre-by-acre details, but we have put land up for sale on a regular basis, and we've tried to consolidate land with county forests, for example, as you mentioned, as well as with the national forests, and not always successful. So I think that the willingness of someone to buy this land is another factor, and that I think could be part of an analysis if the Attorney General and you agree with me that we could ask the staff to take a look at this over the next couple months or so. Okay, I guess I should ask Brad to chime in if he wishes.
I don't have any additional comment.
Okay, I just don't want to exclude you. That's why I bothered. Should we move on from number 7 now, Matt?
Sure, I'm done with number 7. And then you want to start number 8?
Item number 8 is one involving so-called outside activities of the board's executive secretary. This is the one that I found kind of most surprising when I found it. But again, I'll let Matt explain to us what
I appreciate that, Commissioner LaFollette. I guess what I want to say is, I again want to state that our mission at BCPL, I think, is pretty constitutionally prescribed, that we're to sell land and, you know, make money for our beneficiaries. That's what I want to do. I think that's what most people expect the BCPL to do. But I believe that for some reason, it feels to me that the current executive secretary has strayed a little bit from this mission. So, for example, if you look at item 8, page 1, listed right on our BCPL website is a line at the bottom of it that says, global climate change is no longer debatable as a threat to our ecosystems. And we may as well have written, I mean, we could write anything on the BCPL. We could have written on there, you know, the Packers blew their shot at the Super Bowl. I mean, none of this, whether it's global warming or the Green Bay Packers, they have nothing to do with our mission of selling land and making money for kids. So I guess what I'd say is I believe the current executive secretary is in my view, a little bit too fixated on environmental issues. And those issues have, in my opinion, nothing to do with our mission at BCPL. And so I'll just go through a few of these, and then when we're done, if you guys have comments. I look at, you know, for some odd reason, TIA's decided, in my opinion, to use BCPL time, which is state time, to pursue this passion on global warming. And before joining BCPL, you know, I
interrupt you there, because I've been around during her tenure. I don't remember cases when she pursued interests on state time. I do know, because I remember asking about it at least once.
Well, if you don't mind, Commissioner Fowler, if I finish, then I think what I'm presenting will be pretty clear. So why don't I finish, and then we'll go from there.
Can you let me finish? Do you have evidence that she actually pursued non-board items on state time versus her personal vacation time?
That's what I'm talking about right now, yeah.
Okay, we'll continue.
If you look at item 8, page 2, let's see. It says on Friday, April 22nd, 2009, it looks like the Executive Secretary, Tia Nelson, was out in D.C. on BCPL time to testify on global warming. She even states on the top of the testimony that she's the Executive Secretary of BCPL. And I guess I would ask the question, you know, why was this done? You know, I was shocked to learn that this was done on state time because it just doesn't have anything to do with the mission of the BCPL. And the way I look at it, you know, if you look to the next page, that was page 2. If you turn to the next page, page 3, Tia, in this case, was served on a global warming climate change task force. This was a task force Governor Doyle set up, and he appointed her a co-chair of it, which obviously he had the right to appoint whoever he wanted. But I guess what I would say is the executive secretary doesn't work for the governor. The executive secretary works for the BCPL, and this isn't BCPL business. It has nothing to do with selling land and making money for children. And so I have no idea how much time in total in 2008 and 9 was consumed with this global warming instead of doing BCPL work. And again, if you turn to page 8, number 5, there's another item there. This is a bill that was before the legislature. Okay, it was Assembly Bill 649. And you can see listed that Tia was somebody that went in there to testify on it. Again, this was done during BCPL work time. And, you know, as somebody who worked in the legislature at the time, I can tell you that that bill was an ultra-partisan bill. It was a full Democrat bill. Republicans were working fiercely against it. I remember Representative Jim Ott from the Mequon area. He had something called the hot air report or something. I mean, the Republicans at that time were working against it. And so what I don't understand is why we would have somebody from the BCPL pushing for something like global warming when it has nothing to do with the mission of the BCPL. And then I guess the last one I take a look at was a letter that was sent. It starts on page 7. It's a letter sent to the task force and the co-chairs, including, you know, the co-chair Tia Nelson, from seemingly every business group in the state, and they were sending, you know, concerns. And seemingly there, I found a line in there that said that at that time the co-chair Tia Nelson possibly sent a letter with the other co-chair, and they said that they spent about 9 months working on this damn bill for global warming. And, you know, I personally just find that unacceptable because global warming doesn't have to do with, it has nothing to do with the BCPL. So I don't know if you have any comments, Secretary LaFollette.
Well, I guess given this, I believe it would be appropriate if she wishes for Tia
I guess obviously we have limited time here, and I don't want this to be an hour discussion about what they did or didn't do. These are statements, are clearly there, their testimony. I mean, it's a fact, and I got the, you know, I was sent her timesheets, and, you know, she was working on state time, and unless Tia says that she was not on state time, I guess that would be news to me.
Well, again, if she wishes, I think it would be appropriate to let Tia respond in any way she wishes, and she doesn't have to.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did obviously serve on the Global Warming Task Force. I was asked by the governor and considered it an honor to do so. I'm currently serving on an advisory group for Governor Walker with the DNR on a partnership. So I certainly did these things. The testimony, I did not testify in favor of this bill. I would note that all Wisconsin utilities, several companies, that there was a diversity of Democrats and Republicans. The recommendation of that task force was unanimous. It included We Energy and every other utility company in the state of Wisconsin signed off on the recommendations that became Assembly Bill 649. I never testified in favor or in opposition to the bill. I testified for information purposes as the co-chair of the governor's task force service, which I consider to be an honor. As for my testimony in Washington, I was there visiting family on my own time.
Well, according to the timesheet that I had, it was 8 hours of work time. So I guess my point would be, in this case, Ms. Nelson said that she was honored to be on that task force, and that's fine and all, but my point is, I don't know how anybody could logically argue that presenting on a global warming bill has anything to do with loans to children in Wisconsin, which is what the BCPL is most known for. It's what we do well, and it's what I'm most impressed with and most want to make sure we do a better job of doing, and it has nothing to do with that, and it's just a separate mission.
Again, I think you're being redundant, and to save time,
And that's fine. We can move on, but I just wanted to make my point pretty clear on that. Let's move on to item 8, the same item, but page 9. This was a separate issue that was up in the legislature last session. It was 2013 AJR 48, which was a bill to eliminate the treasurer's office. I'm obviously in office right now as the state treasurer, and I'm in office, I believe, because of my pledge to eliminate the treasurer's office. As someone who worked in the Capitol last session, I worked for the guy that was the number 2 on the bill. I was then and still shocked that at that point, the BCPL Executive Secretary, Tia Nelson, was working against this bill. And what I find odd about that is that 2 of the 3 members of the BCPL board, the state treasurer and the secretary of state, so yourself, sir, as well as the former treasurer, Kurt Schuller, were directly affected by that bill. And I believe if they wanted to, or in this case you or in that case Schuller, wanted to lobby the legislature against it or for it, that was your prerogative to do. I don't understand why the executive secretary was lobbying on that bill, and I just didn't think that that was appropriate.
Well, again, I'm going to comment on that because this is an issue that I've had some concern about. The reason, and if you look at the document that you included, the May 28th letter from Bob Lang, and if you look carefully at the last paragraph of that, et cetera, and I won't go through a lot of detail, but the point was at that time there was a lot of concern about how this legislation would affect the board, particularly in terms of the management of the unclaimed property issue. And this is something that I think I would like to say this board should look at more detail when we have time at a future meeting. Because at the moment, Bob Lang indicated and other people agreed that if this bill were to pass, and this is the reason why the board asked Tia to...
ask Tia to do that?
Well, I know she and I discussed it.
But you're not the board. You're one of 3.
But I don't want to argue about that. But I do want to say that it was relevant to our revenue from unclaimed property. And then... let me put a period there and then bring in my other comment. For some years now, I've been concerned, and if you look at the Constitution that you were concerned about back under Article point number 5, it says all monies and the clear proceeds of property that accrued by the state from forfeiture or should go to the school funds. So I've worried about this for years, and I've never gotten any attention to it, and this bill brought it to my attention more clearly, because at the moment now, even though that bill was changed somewhat, we're currently giving Department of Revenue that they're taking $3 million a year of the school children's money, as you like to refer, to manage this. It's my opinion that $3 million and the $500,000 that still goes to the state treasurer should not be spent in that way, but should go into the trust.
I guess, Secretary...
property funds of over $3 million a year I think should be going into the trust. I
won't,
but I'm going to ask the TIA and the board to put on a future agenda item when we have more time, and when the Attorney General can think about it and see if he sees any merit in my thinking, that we should ask some legal advice as to whether that $3.5 million should not be going into the trust and not be going to the Department of Revenue.
Commissioner, I guess all I would say is, you know, you just talked about the bill, and, you know, we're not going to waste time. You know, obviously other people have things to do here, but what you just talked about was being for or against. You being against, obviously I'm for. But what I'm saying is you and I are people that are elected. We have every right to argue before the legislature and take out our points on that. What I would say is you said you would talk to Tia about doing it. I don't think one person should be able to direct the executive secretary to do something. I prefer if the executive secretary focuses on the BCPL business. You and I obviously differ on this bill, and that's fine. But I'm saying we should be able to take that, you know, our concerns to the legislature because we're elected, and that's what we should do. We should not have our staff weighing in on it because, I mean, first of all, in this example, we're completely opposed, and we're not going to change probably. So
I think we understand the point.
Sure.
And okay. I think in the future, what you're saying is that if our staff feels that certain activities will impinge upon our board activity, there should be an agenda item so the board can examine that. I think that's
a
problem. Okay. All right. Now, before I go on again, Brad, do you have any thoughts about item number 8 that you'd like to express?
No, I don't have any additional comments right now.
All right. I'm trying to allow you to be involved if you wish. Okay. Let's keep going now. Item number 9 is a discussion of the board logistics.
I'll just keep this brief, but I guess generally speaking, I was a little shocked to see that there's really no organizational structure to the board when new commissioners are added. I guess what I'd say is in comparison to other groups, whether it's the State Assembly, the Senate, the U.S. Congress, even the GAB just had a new group get together. Typically, when a new group gets together with new people on it, commissioners, members, whatever it may be, there's usually a vote at the beginning of those new terms. And I thought it should have been automatic at the beginning of this new term, considering especially we have 2 out of the 3 members are completely new, myself and the Attorney General. So we should have been given the option of choosing who we want or do not want, and I instead feel like, you know, less forced to be keeping former appointees. So I guess in the future, and I won't, you know, we won't discuss it necessarily today other than me saying this, I think we might want to consider having the terms of whether it was the board chair or for sure the executive secretary kind of automatically end at the 4-year.
Let me be clear.
Can I finish this for a second? I'm not making a motion.
We need to be clear for the minutes. You're not discussing item 9, but you're discussing item 10 and 11?
No, I'm on item 9 still. This is logistics. I guess what I'm saying is in the future for the logistics of this board, I guess I would say that I think having the terms of, like I said, maybe the board chair, but for sure the executive secretary, I think especially for future commissioners, you know, in 4 years from now, there won't be me here for sure because I'm not running. I think it would be appropriate that when they take office, that they're given an opportunity to pick their appointee. And if the new commissioners want to retain current people, well, then that's fine. And we may do that this year. But I don't think it should be that we're forced to keep old officers unless, I'm having to bring this up as an agenda item. It seems logical to let new members vote on who they want to be their representative. So in the future, I think it's something we could discuss.
In order to expedite, I think we get that point.
Sure.
So now, can we move on to item 10?
There isn't much to talk about here. All I wanted to do is say, I think at some point, it doesn't seem like, for example, right now, sir, you're the board chair. It doesn't seem like there's many duties that you have that I really care. It seems fine. There's only one in regards to the salary for the executive secretary that I want to discuss future. But I guess what I'd say is, I think that we should have at least had a vote on the organizational structure. Do you know, Commissioner LaFollette, is there only a board chair? I know some commissions have like a board chair, a treasurer, a secretary. Do you know if any of that's what we have or?
Well, no. Our structure is just we've always had one person as a chair
Okay.
who has, as you said, very limited duties. Primarily, what I try to do is chair these meetings and try to get through them in a efficient and fair way the best I can.
Well, and I think you've done a fine job, so I don't have a problem with that. And generally, I don't care if, you know, you remain on or the Attorney General. I don't think it's something you even want. I just think that it should have been standard protocol that we would have voted on it. So, that being said, I don't want to make the board chair vote today, because rather I'd want to show you and the Attorney General, you know, so the Secretary of State and the Attorney General, the courtesy of thinking about this. But so I will ask that on the next agenda we at least have a discussion and a vote on the board chair.
So, okay. Should we do item
11?
Right, 11 before we go on then.
Yep, and then item 11 is the last one. Again, I think I want to have a vote on the position of Executive Secretary at our next meeting. I think it should have been a part of our first meeting, but it wasn't. I think new members should be given the option of choosing our appointee that serves on the board for us, kind of not being forced to just kind of keep the current member. And going with that, I don't want to have a vote on it today. Rather, I'd want to show the Attorney General and the Secretary of State the courtesy of thinking about this, and then bringing it up in 2 weeks from now. So.
Okay, so you're requesting that we have a vote on that. Let me just say for the record, in defense of, in defense of Tia and the staff for not following that logistic idea that you expressed, is that we've changed board members many times in my tenure. Both treasurers and attorney generals have come and gone from both parties. And we've never, as a regular practice, at the first meeting, done as you suggest. So,
that's understandable.
Would you please not interrupt?
Okay, go ahead, sir.
So the fact that they did not do that, it was not showing some neglect on their part, but just following what had been done for 20 years. I respect your wish to vote on them, but the fact that it wasn't done at the first meeting is no one's fault. And now you've requested that we do that, and I'll ask Brad's opinion when I finish, whether he wants to do that 2 weeks from now or a month from now or whatever his preference is.
Well,
okay, Brad.
Before Brad speaks, I guess, you know, you said I interrupted you, and I don't mean to do that. I'm, you know, tough on these calls because we're not sitting together. Obviously, I was interrupted a few times as well. But I guess all I would say is, you know, I took a quick look back. You said, you know, you obviously, sir, you've been on as the Secretary of State, you've been on this board for almost 40 years, and you said, you know, commissioners have come and gone. But taking a look back over the course of your tenure, for example, I only found that the last session, so from 2010 to 14, from my recollection, from what I found online, was the only time that the party there weren't at least two Democrats on the board, yourself and one of the other treasurers, attorney general. So, I mean, historically speaking, it's always been you and one other person. So I think that makes a little more sense why there hasn't been as much changeover. But, yeah, I appreciate your concern. And like I said, if the Attorney General wants to talk about it, that's perfect as well.
Brad?
Well, I've served on a number of boards. This one's a little different because it's a government board. But on most boards, there is some process for periodic evaluation in review of the executive director. Has there been any such process over the years? Before I would want to vote on whether we retain the current executive director, I would want to participate in some kind of an evaluation process.
Yeah, I have to be honest and tell you, I do not remember doing such an evaluation. Maybe Tia or Tom, an attorney can fill us in. I don't remember. Sorry.
Yeah, this is Tia here. Doug and I do relatively annual discussions of my performance here, and certainly that happened. I don't have the date in front of me. But when I received a discretionary merit compensation on that date, Doug and I would have gone through my performance. That was largely based on my success in getting unanimous votes of the legislature for the bill granting us land bank authority, and then we're about to hit the 10-year anniversary of receiving that authority, and there's a number of metrics that we use around here for measuring success on increasing our timber management efficiency. So, Doug, we did talk about that, and also the fact that we're generating record earnings to the common schools this year. That's in my executive secretary's report. So it has not been a written process, and that coming from an institution where it always had been a written process, that, you know, that I did make note of that, and Doug, we talked about it a while ago, and I was informed that it had been more informal in this place. So in answer more directly to your question, there have been discussions of the accomplishments and performance of the current executive secretary, but they are not in writing. And I'd be much more comfortable if they were.
Right, and I think that's a valid point, and that you made, Mr. Attorney General. I would ask the Attorney General, and possibly an open question. I agree that would be a good system to set up. I don't know who would do such an evaluation. I'm a little puzzled as to how we do it. What do you think?
Well, and this is not a, it's not a civil service position, right? It's an appointed position at the will of the Board of Commissioners?
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, boy. So would we hire an outside person to evaluate the executive secretary every
four years,
or what would your suggestion be?
Well, I think, you know, the normal process would be to identify some performance measures to, I don't think it's an outside group is the answer. I think it would be us. I'm new to this, this board, so I would prefer not to do this in the first month.
Let me make this suggestion, and we can discuss it. Would it be adequate if we ask the executive secretary, namely Tia at this point, to put together a set of metrics that she thinks would be appropriate to evaluate her position?
Yeah,
and then on a regular basis, we can decide how often, whether it was yearly or more often or less often, ask her to respond in a written form and present to the board how she measures herself against those metrics which we would have approved previously. How does that sound?
I think that's the best way to go forward is, and frankly, it can be, you know, a self-evaluation to give her an opportunity to talk about the places where she believes she has had accomplishments, her strengths, her weaknesses, places for improvement, et cetera. That's kind of a typical thing with an executive director evaluation.
I like that. That sounds fine to me. So Tia, do you feel that you have enough instructions as to what to do about this now?
Well, I have a feel for it and appreciate it, and am happy to follow through on it. I think, though, since this is new with the board, I'm trying to think on my feet here because I didn't contemplate
this. I suggest we come.
If I could get some specifics on what it is that would be considered an adequate framework for self-evaluation, that would be helpful. So I don't spend a lot of time doing something that doesn't meet expectations that I don't, that have only been sketched, you know, broadly put out for me. Or I don't know, we could go to DOA. I'm really just making this up as I go along. I could ask for some guidelines from DOA or something.
I'd suggest we continue this conversation at a future meeting, because I think we also need to consider whether that would become necessarily a public record. We would want an executive director to be candid, but I don't I'm not sure whether that should then be public, where they offer self-criticism or places for improvement. I don't know the answer to that, and I want to think about that.
Well, I think that's a good point, and I think what we would do and what we did in the past is went into executive session to discuss an executive director or hiring a new executive director, which we have done in the past. So I think that would be what we would do. I would like to make this suggestion in response to Matt's point, number 11. Rather than vote on the executive secretary position 2 weeks from now, I would like to suggest that we ask Tia and the Attorney General and the Treasurer can chime in with emails to her, and she may learn something from Department of Personnel over at DOA, and ask her to put together this new idea we're talking about, and then at a future meeting, probably not for a month or so, we would have an executive session. We would allow Tia to, as Brad suggested, candidly tell us the positives and the negatives, what she's accomplished, what she hopes to accomplish, etc. And then at that would be an appropriate time, I think, to have a vote on whether we wish to continue with the current executive secretary.
This is Commissioner Domczyk, and you know, obviously the Attorney General and the Secretary of State, you guys need a little more time on this. I'm not here to try to force you guys to make a decision on something. Obviously, so in 2 weeks from now, we won't have the time, or we won't have, you know, researched this well enough. That's fine. So I guess next week or 2 weeks from now, we won't have to worry about it. And the board chair also, we don't have to worry about it because there isn't a heck of a lot of duties there. But it's just at some point down the road. And, you know, to my point, to be maybe it's something that whether it's the Secretary of State or the Attorney General, they could have some personal one-on-one conversations with somebody like Tia or the office, the BCPL staff. And I understand the Attorney General's time commitments are significantly more than mine or the Secretary of State. So we'll defer this for another meeting. I think that makes sense. And if, you know, we want to discuss it in the future, that makes sense as well.
Okay. Brad, is that sort of fit into what you're thinking?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess then the item number 12 is future agenda items. I guess we've sort of discussed that, I think, right?
Yeah, I think we just do the normal stuff, the loans, and that's about it.
Okay. And then the last item is a regular item that we always end with, and that's, do we have any report from the executive staff?
Yeah, I did the executive secretary's report in writing this time because I didn't have a chance to give it last time, and I thought, so I mean the main things to look for in the year 2015 are we've generated record earnings in our 167-year history for distribution of the Wisconsin Public Schools. This is the sole source of state aid for school libraries. Another thing to look for is the Common School Fund is going to exceed for the first time in history $1 billion sometime in the next few months. I'll keep you posted as we get closer to that. I suspect that will be a newsworthy item. And then I just wanted to take the opportunity to point out that our operational efficiency here in managing these assets and distributing these earnings is unmatched in the private or public sector.
And I see what you've written here, and I'm sure that both Brad and Matt have had a chance to look at it. Are there any questions about Tia's report?
No.
Okay. I speaking to both of you, I thank you for your patience. It's a little difficult on phone sometimes to know who's speaking or who's interrupting, and I apologize if I've interrupted.
I do as well, sir.
I'm sure we can work our way through this once we learn better whose voices are whose. Before we adjourn, do either of my fellow commissioners have any comments or points to make?
Nope.
If not, then I would ask a motion to adjourn.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I guess I heard two at once. I'll vote aye.
Aye.
Thank you all very much, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Bye.